Welcome. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and we have a very special guest waiting to speak with you today. And I believe that this is a very important subject. Facing a series of devastating, life-changing events, and knowing that he didn't want to go to his deathbed, not having tried to do the best for his family, led him to start innovative and highly praised workshops. He is founder of the Young Men's Ultimate Weekend, a wilderness rite of passage for young men. And we are going to speak with Mark Schillinger. And prior to starting his workshops, Mark was a chiropractor, or perhaps is a chiropractor, specializing in mind-body wellness. And he was voted best in Marin by a reader's poll in the Marin Independent Journal. And he described his personal and business life as hitting the wall, moving from Oregon to California, as he and his wife were in the midst of getting divorced. So we're going to be joined right now by Mark Schillinger. Welcome to Heart of Mind. It's so good to talk to you. And it's really important for people to realize that everybody goes through their trials and tribulations, no matter where they are, no matter what class, no matter what caste, no matter what race, we all struggle to get through the challenges of life. And you have been putting together something that's so important because you are helping to shepherd young men from boyhood to manhood. So I want to welcome you and invite you to say hello and tell us a little bit more about yourself. I kind of gave the brief version of your bio.
Well, first of all, I am so thrilled to be here because although I live in California the last 40 years, I am a Queens native, and I grew up in the 60s as a teen loving WBAI. That was the place to go to get caught up on the real news. So to be on the radio with you all these years later is just goosebumpy. So thank you for having me. First of all, I really wanted to say that.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. As far as my story, I mean, I'll just keep it brief. It's very simple, really. I grew up very precocious spiritually. I was always the guy looking up at the sky going, you know, where is God? What is this? How am I going to make it in the world? Why are we even here? And thankfully, I grew up in a family with very loving parents, two brothers and a sister. We had all the usual, you know, sibling rivalries, but we loved each other literally to this day. We stay connected all the time. And yet, even though it was a loving family, I grew up in this tiny apartment in Queens with my grandmother, who spoke hardly any English, And there was a lot of stress. And what I didn't know when I was really young was that there was a strong history of depression in my family, including suicide. So I had this vision that I was going to go do something big in the world because I wanted to discover what the universe was and then tell the whole world about it. And I knew I had to, I knew I had to learn how to deal with stress. So by the time I was in my teens, as soon as my dad let me take a train and bus from Queens into Manhattan, I started going to this place that's no longer there, but was for many, many decades, called Samuel Weiser's Bookstore down on Broadway near NYU. And I was very precocious spiritually, so I'd walk in there as a 16 or 17-year-old saying, I want to learn more about God, or I want to learn more about Pythagoras. I heard he was into music, not just, you know, math. And they would really take me in. Every time I would go, they would recognize me. They would say, okay, now what? And they would take me to some section of the bookstore. They would sit with me. They would ask me questions. It was just amazing. So I remember getting deep into spirituality. I remember realizing that I wanted to learn how to calm myself down, which has taken me, I don't know how many decades to master, but I have. And then a great thing happened when I went off to college in upstate New York. I wasn't happy there. And then Empire State College started in the late 60s, which was the first university that didn't have classrooms. You could just get a mentor, and the mentor then would say, okay, I want you to take a class at New School or at Hunter College or study with this person. And so I had this amazing college career where I studied with amazing people and at different universities, you know, in Manhattan. And all that led me to realize that with as many teachers that I was studying with, and many of them were phenomenal, they all had different things to say about how to be happy, how to be enlightened, how to be healthy, how to be holy. So I realized early on that if I was going to be happy, I had to find my own way. And that if I was going to help people, because when I was younger, I took a vow with a Buddhist teacher. It's called the Bodhisattva vow. And the vow was to help other people be enlightened, and that my way to do that was going to be through my own process and then sharing that with others. But I learned early on that helping people be enlightened didn't mean that my way was going to be their way. So since my early teens, I had started to put together sort of like the greatest hits of all the teachers that I studied with. And by the time I was in my mid-40s, I created a method called The Right Way, which stands for five virtues: respect, intelligence, grace, humor, and true. And this was kind of like a summary of all that I learned from these teachers, put it together in a package that really allowed other people to discover who they were personally, how to be happy and holy within themselves, and also how to relate to others in good ways. So long story short now, and I'll bring it to an end. I moved from New York to Santa Cruz in the 70s, which was like going to a different alternate universe. I mean, I was an alternative kind of guy in New York, but going to Santa Cruz in the 70s was really a different thing. And that really opened me up to the possibilities that I really could hit my goals. I really could do something special in the world, and that it was going to take a lot of internal focus. And from there, I went off to chiropractic school in Portland, Oregon, became a chiropractor. I decided that I was going to specialize in stress management, which I did and still do. In fact, I've been approved by the State Board of Examiners here in California. I teach a continuing education course for doctors to teach their patients how to relax their minds in 15 seconds or less using mindfulness-based strategies. So I've been in practice now in Marin 35 years. I've helped a lot of people. But something happened to me when I was raising my son, Gabe, who's now 37. But when he was a teenager, I was losing control. I could not get through to him. And I had to realize that all of my old school parenting methods, like the ones that my dad used with me successfully, I might add, were not working with my son or my daughter for that matter. And he was just moving further and further away from me. And as much as I loved him, it just pained me to know that the way I describe it is like he was on a ship in a harbor getting ready to sail out and leave me behind. And I had no way to go after him. And also, I was going through a painful divorce with my former wife, Suzanne, and that was not helping either. And thankfully now, Suzanne and I are the best of friends again, and we teach parenting workshops together, which is wonderful. But during those days in the late 80s, 90s, things were really painful. And so because I grew up with mentorship, not only from my dad, but from my relatives and lots of the men and women in my neighborhood, I decided I was going to find a mentor on how to be a better dad. I heard about a man up in Canada, Brad Leslie, who was putting on rite of passage events for young men. I went with Gabe. I went as sort of the medical guy, and Gabe went as a participant, of course, and it really helped. And I was so impressed when I got back from Canada, I decided I was going to start my own nonprofit. and with the help of so many great men, almost all of them who are still with me today, 20 years later, we started the Young Men's Ultimate Weekend. And, of course, I wanted Gabe to attend, and I knew he had a couple of friends who had to go because they were all living on my couch in the bachelor pad. And so I knew five young men were going to show up to this event in the year 2000. And, Catherine, what ended up happening was that we had over 200 young men attend this first rite of passage event. And there was no advertising. It was all word of mouth. And that's when I realized I was not the only father who was having a hard time raising their kids. And so what happened was about 10 years into this event, I realized that it's not just the parents who need a rite of passage. I'm not just the young men who need a rite of passage. The parents needed something also, because the young men were being returned to their families where maybe the same dysfunctional patterns were happening. So then I did something radically different. I started a rite of passage initiation for adults, for parents, so that they could learn to let go of their son as a boy and start to relate to him as an intelligent young man, using this technology that I created, the Right Way Method for Family Unity. And so once we started putting on initiation events for young men who were out in the woods going through their challenges, I was in a hotel with parents. And here it is now 10 years later since we've been doing that work, and the results have been amazing, really helping families have more caring and cooperative relationships has really turned out to be my life mission. I did not know that this is how I was going to fulfill my goal of doing something good in the world. And I'll end my little bio here with this. 3-4 weeks ago now, I guess it was, or 5 weeks ago, my work was highlighted on CNN on a show called This Is Life with Lisa Ling. She heard about my work and decided to come film the entire event. She was the only woman ever allowed there. And, of course, she was masterful. And she filmed all these young men and all these mentors working together to draw out of the young men their wisdom, their instincts, their ability to start thinking for themselves because they have to leave their devices behind. And it's just, it was just amazing to see her capture this work on film. And so we've been inundated with hundreds of calls and emails from all around the country on how do we work with young men? What's our secrets? So it's been very fulfilling to see my life turn out to be focused on helping families, because I do believe that the only way that the world is going to go through the positive transformations it needs to is if we can have healthy young men and young women growing up in healthy, thriving households so that they can create a world that is really based more on love and cooperation and generosity, and not on hatred, greed, and domination. So that's my story in a nutshell.
Wow. And it's compelling. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you came to realize that your parents' style of parenting was not useful now? And what is it that young people need now from their parents?
Well, okay, well, I became aware that my style wasn't working because I just had to look at what I was doing, which was a lot of yelling, a lot of demonstrative behavior, you know, pounding my fist and that kind of thing. And again, while it worked for me and my brothers and my sister back in a different era, it wasn't working for my son. That was the main thing I noticed. Plus, I was into reggae music and I was into new age music, and Gabe was heavy into rap and hip hop. And when I would fight him on that, you know, sitting in the car and we keep wanting to change the station, something hit me. And this was the major realization. This is what I tell parents now when I teach or coach privately. The first thing I learned, Catherine, was I need to just be quiet. I needed to let my son speak and listen and really listen and then ask more questions and go deeper and deeper into who is he. Here I was trying to be a personal growth expert as a life coach for people, and I couldn't even do that for my own son. Once I started listening to him more carefully, then I realized that, oh, I need to support him in healthy behaviors, of course, that would allow him to really express himself in a good way. And once I started doing that, which meant allowing him to drop out of college and essentially start working in the music industry and opening up, eventually, just within a couple of years, he opened up his own hip-hop recording studio. That's when the relationship really started doing well. And now here it is, 20 years later, he has a company called Legion Beats, and it is one of the biggest companies in the world selling hip-hop beats to the major artists. So once I learned to let him be himself, he thrived. And the truth of the matter is, the same thing was happening with my teenage daughter at the time, Becca, who I also loved very much and she was getting into hard rock and, you know, bands like Nine Inch Nails and other bands that I would never consider listening to. And once again, once I started listening to her more carefully and really trying to respond to her in a better way, our relationship, you know, thrived. In fact, so much so that to this point now, she has actually moved back in my house a couple of years ago. She went through divorce. She needed a little bit of a safe haven for a while. And just like with my wife's former wife, Suzanne, you know, all of us are sort of like reunited. We all live within a few minutes of each other, and we're the closest family. I like to call it the happiest divorced married family. So that's what I realized. I just needed to listen better. And that's what I teach parents. I say the very first thing you need to do when you're speaking to your children is nothing. Well, it's hard for parents to do nothing because they love their kids and they have that parenting instincts, which is to help them out and mentor and guide them to make it in the world. However, the first thing that I teach the parents on how to listen is how to do simple mindfulness-based stress reduction techniques that I've created that just take 15 seconds to do. So while their sons or daughters are calling them horrible names, they sit and relax right in front of their children. And once they can stay relaxed and control their, you know, their adverse reactions, then I teach them how to communicate using a very specific process, which ultimately allows their children to go deeper into themselves and give them a chance to articulate what they're trying to say. And so in this method of communication, they allow their children to say anything they want to, even if they're lying through their teeth. And then they're trained on how to come back by acknowledging what they're saying, trying to find something right in it, and then saying what's true for them, even like whose consequences. But the two major things I would tell parents is, number one, learn to relax quickly. And number two, learn how to communicate in a respectful way. And those two things alone are the foundation. Of course, there's other methods, you know, that we use in our workshops, but those are the two main things. Relax, and then when you respond, it's got to be in a respectful way.
That's excellent. And I have interacted with younger people in my environment and in my work, and have found that they are struggling with their parents and really their parents' value systems, which they have been living by, you know, having to go through certain kinds of educational hoops, having to have certain kind of income, and all kinds of behaviors. But they seem to be lost. They have lost themselves in this process, because I'm speaking of young adults, not teenagers, but young people in their 20s who are tremendously unhappy and successful and can't navigate an environment. Well, some of them are successful, some not, but they can't navigate their internal core, their internal environment, almost to the point that they don't even seem to realize that they have one.
Yep.
So I'm wondering if you could speak to the young person on, because their parents may or may not be cooperative or understand or be willing to engage in a process, but how can young people begin to turn it around for themselves to understand and to go on that self, that journey of self-realization?
That's exactly right. Journey of self-realization. We're all here on that journey. So a couple of things I would say, Catherine. First of all, one of the expressions I use with parents that I coach, because I mentor young men ages 13 to 40. That's what I call young men now, 13 to 40, because there are so many young people, like you say, who are not teens. They're in their 20s and 30s. They may have achieved, you know, sometimes great professional success, and yet they have the minds or the emotional intelligence of an 18-year-old possibly or 20-year-old. So this is a pandemic that's been going on for many years. And while there's a number of major causes of this, the first one I would say has been the, I call it the technology bomb that's been thrown into the family dynamic. When young people are raised with video games and digital devices, their attention is always taken outside of them. It's not taken inside of them, or rarely is. It's mostly outside. So they're growing up in a world where they're always looking outside of themselves to see how they need to be and what's going on out there. And what's happening is, what I'm finding is that they're literally not in touch with their natural, biological, instinctual wisdom that knows how to individuate, that knows how to leave the house when it's time, like at 18 or ish or younger, they're losing touch with that. They're not aware that that exists. And so what's happening is they're just conforming now. And so I have an expression in my work with families, which is conformity without authenticity is anarchy. And so with the anarchy is that children are growing up to become young people and young adults who don't know how to have healthy relationships. They don't know how to get in touch with their own feelings most of the time. And I can speak to a 25-year-old young man that I'm coaching and say, what's up for you right now? And they'll go, I don't know. So it's a pandemic. Young people are not doing a good job only because the adults that are leading them are not doing a good job. We are thrusting this technology into the lives of families where everybody's living in the same house, but they're isolated. They're in their rooms. They're on their devices. And what's happening is millions of years of evolution for human development is fading, which is where humans must feel at a young age with their parents love and connection. You know, we know about that. Listeners on WBI know that these things about, you know, attachment bonding, those things are fading. They're becoming a thing of the past. The children are kind of raising themselves. When my dad used to say, go to your room and think about it after I did something wrong. Well, I went to my little bedroom in this tiny little apartment with seven people, 900 square feet. There was no place to go. There was no devices. When I was younger, I didn't even have like a stereo to listen to until I was probably, I think, about 14 or 15. So you did have to think about it, or at least feel remorse or feel something. Now these children go back into their bedrooms and they don't have to feel anything. They just go play. And they think their whole life is going to be a playful event where their parents will take care of them forever. And I say that with no judgment towards the parents, because the parents, they're isolated because they have so much stuff to do. The culture has thrust so much work on people, which is not natural for human primates. That's for sure. We spend way too much time working. So everybody's so stressed out trying to keep it together that they can't bond, they can't connect. The children grow up raising themselves, basically. And that's what's happening. The fabric of human family life is fading, and we're expected to become artificially intelligent way faster than natural evolution allows. That's what I'm seeing as the main problem. So the solution, mentorship. That's the solution. I was raised with mentors everywhere. I remember one time, I think it was about 10 or 11, and I was a pretty good kid just because I was mostly scared crapless of what I would happen to if I got caught doing something. But I remember one night, it was Halloween, I was with a friend or two, and I was gonna spray some shaving cream on cars. I thought that was going to be a really big deal. And I remember hiding in the bushes. I was getting ready to spring as soon as it got dark and spring out and spray a car. And all of a sudden, I heard a voice from behind me, and it was one of my mother's friends, and she was like, Mork, is that you? You know, what are you doing? And so that's how I was raised. Like, there was mentors and people. Everybody cared. Everybody around me really knew who I was, and I could go up to them and say, I need help. So mentorship is really what it's all about. When I got to college, I went to this college, Empire State College, at the Fed in New York, and it was all about mentors. And then I got turned on to more mentors. And so everything is mentorship. And what I'm finding now, especially with millennials, is that they don't want leaders. They want mentors. They want people who can relax, hear them out, and then come back with advice and information that makes them feel good about who they are and makes them recognize that they're on a long journey. In fact, I often tell the young people that I coach, the only difference between me and you is that I'm older. So I've made a hell of a lot more mistakes than you have. And thankfully, I've learned from most of them, and it's put me on a good path. So that's what I think young people need. They need mentors. So in my work, my motto is a mentor in every family. I believe that every family should have a mentor where everybody's sharing their values and their virtues. Everybody knows what everybody needs to be healthy, happy, and holy. Where the family mentor knows how to help parents maintain their authority and their influence while allowing their children to discover who they are. So I do these rite of passage events for young men. Eventually, we'll do them for young women, and we do them for parents. The goal now is I'm going to be training mentors on how to go into families and help keep them together.
Okay. Well, this sounds like a very useful, you know, it really contributes to the well-being of the community. And there are people who might have some questions. So I love the idea of what you're doing, because ultimately you're giving a good understanding so that even if there are people out there who need to mentor themselves by beginning to think differently about the world, about life, about themselves, it seems like you have something really, some basic core information that you can contribute. But I was wondering, I know that you picked men primarily because you're a man and you were working with your son. But is there a significant difference in how you think young men and young women should be mentored?
No, not at all. I have never been raised with the battle of the sexes mentality. My parents always preached love and respect for themselves and each other, let alone out in the world. So absolutely, I have learned, because I do mentor young women, of course, as well, that the same desires, the same vision is true for young men and young women, which is to really figure out who they are, how to make it in the world, how to be at peace with themselves, how to be healthy, how to have a family someday. The only difference I would say is basically sometimes just the tone of voice that I speak to young men versus young women. The information is exactly the same. It's just the tone of voice sometimes. So you're absolutely correct. There's really no difference at all.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, I don't see that there would need to be. I know that in some traditional cultures, they mentor the girls or, you know, put them through rites of passage, and boys have a different rites of passage. I guess that's more in line with their culture. But I think that it's a great tragedy that our society has evolved without that understanding and that need to really be concerned with young people as they're making that transition from children to teens to adults. There's something there. And in our culture, it seems to be that's when children are most abandoned of their parents' attention.
Yeah. What's happening in all my years of research is to, like, how did it get to this place where families are basically falling apart? It didn't begin with the technological bomb. It's sort of going to be ending with that, it looks like. I hope not. I'm an optimist, and I'll do all that I can to help families have, you know, an easeful transition into this new way of living. But here's what I've known. I'm just going to summarize this really quickly. I did a lot of research for a while about what was family life like 10,000 years ago, before the agricultural revolution. Like, what was it like? And it was very tribal. And yes, there were, you know, good guys and bad guys then, but for the most part, tribes of 150 to a few hundred people had to cooperate. They had to raise each other's children. They had to let the children express themselves so they could discover what gifts and talents they had. And so everybody kind of took care of each other. What happened was when the agricultural revolution occurred, that's when a few people learned how to domesticate plants and then animals. And once they had the skills to store the food, they sort of began to dominate. And so family life switched from where everybody could relax because they knew they were all going to be taken care of to where the parents had to really start worrying about how are they going to make it, let alone how their children are going to make it. And then we're just going to kind of, and that went on for thousands of years where basically the patriarchal society got bigger and stronger because they could dominate and they could control the resources, and everybody else had to go run for it and try to get it. And then we had the Industrial Revolution, you know, where we really forced children away from families so that they could make the money for the people who, you know, who had it and who wanted to keep it. And then we had the Educational Revolution, where all of a sudden education became less about mentorship and apprenticeship and became more about sitting in a classroom, which is, you know, hell for young men, including me. So
yeah, for us girls too.
Yes. Okay, good. Thank you for saying that. I mean that. You know, it's traditionally understood. But it is, and you're totally right, because, you know, most young people don't sit. They have to learn and move. And, of course, that's been, you know, researched now by science. We know that most young people learn better when they're moving. But so that educational revolution came, and then the technological revolution. So everything has been leading us down this road where families are falling apart. Young people don't really know who they are. We need to bring rite of passage back. Again, not just for young people, but for parents too. And we need to honor rites of passage through our whole life. I'm 67. I've gone through probably 4 or 5 earthquakes, is what I call them. Major shifts of perception about reality and myself. Major shifts in behavior. Major shifts in how I relate to other people. And we're losing that skill to to know how to tap into ourselves and really monitor how our lives are going and how we need to navigate, as you said earlier in the show, how to navigate our own selves, let alone how to navigate out in the world.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. We have a number of calls standing by. I just wanted to let everyone know that this is Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. And we are speaking with Mark Schillinger, and he is a creator of these mentorship groups. And before we take those calls, maybe you can give out a contact or let people know how they can learn more.
Thank you. There's a couple of places. If people want to learn more about the Young Men's Ultimate Weekend and how this will help their sons, and by the way, this is for all young men. This is not just like for quote-unquote troubled youth or underserved youth. This is for, I started this for my middle-class son. And so this is for every young man. I just want to be very clear about that. So, yes, the Young Men's Ultimate Weekend website is ymuw.org. And if parents go to that website, they'll see there's a couple of free gifts for them. There's a free ebook called Why It's Harder Than Ever to Raise Your Son and What You Can Do About It. And then there's a free report that I wrote called The Four Secrets to Help Your Son Grow Up Right Now. There's another website called Challenging Teenage Sons. And Challenging Teenage Sons website is all about the work that I do with parents. For example, we have our first ever online course for parents starting this Tuesday, January 12th. And so that's the website where they can get tons of free information on how to raise their son and learn more about the services that we provide, like these rite of passage workshops, private coaching, and things like that.
Okay, so we'll give all that out again at the end because it was a lot.
All right,
let's try to get a caller in. Hello, you're on the air. What's your name and your question for our guest?
Hello. My name is Carol Gregory.
Go ahead,
Catherine,
Carol.
Thank you so much for your program. I appreciate your work so much.
Thank you.
Mark, could you spell your name slowly? I can tell you we're from New York because you speak really fast. I'm from the Midwest. So could you slow down? And also, could you say a bit about how a lot of our parents are at home now? I'm a teacher, and they have to teach their children online. And I'm working with parents who have to do this, and they're saying how much they hate it. And, yes, the children only want to be in their room to relax on their gadgets. So, but could you maybe say something that would help parents who are adjusting to becoming teachers?
Carol, I want to make sure I understand your question. You want me to give some advice about how something you said, parents and teachers, I missed that
parents
part.
Parents are at home with the children because schools are closed down?
Yes, yes.
So how can parents who hate teaching and they hate online things, how can they help their children?
Okay. The correct spelling of my name is MarkSchillinger. And here's what I would tell parents to do who are not very good with devices like me and need help. There's a phenomenon that's happening all around the country, possibly all around the world, and it's called PODS, P-O-D-S, PODS. Parents are getting together with other parents. They're taking matters into their own hands, which they should and they are, and they're combining the resources that each parent or each family has. So maybe one parent is good at teaching this. Maybe one is good at teaching that. Maybe one knows another parent who's good at this, and they bring in guests to their pod. So it's community teaching. I would say that is the best solution. Don't do this alone. We're so isolated already. We need to be more connected, not just to our own children, but to other families. So this becomes a great opportunity not to rely on, quote unquote, the system for the health and well-being of your children.
Excellent. Let's take our next caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Mary Jean. I dropped the phone just as he was reading, spelling his last name, so he could do that for me again. But my question is, I'm a grandmother, and I'm watching, and I'm talking about girls now, but he did say that things are similar. So I'm just wondering how, and I'm watching the schism that's existing between the girls and my daughter. And I was wondering, as a grandmother, how I could kind of share this information with her, or how to get online so she could see some of this information that he's giving out. Or if, okay. And if there's anything in writing also that could be purchased.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Couple of things in, Mary. Again, I'll spell my last name, which is S-C-H-I-L-L-I-N-G-E-R, Mark Schillinger. And here's what I would say as a grandma. We have, I'd say, about 20% of the adults who attend our parenting rite of passage are grandparents. And I hear their frustrations because they probably do know best what their grandchildren need. And regardless of the conditions that their children, meaning their own sons and daughters, are having raising their grandchildren, here's what I recommend. I recommend that you drop any thinking, Mary, that you may have any authority here. You have no authority anymore. It's painful, and it's true. You don't have the ability to tell your daughter or your son how to raise their children. You can't say yes or no to whatever they're doing. However, with a very loving, caring heart, you still have a lot of influence. And if you're sincere in your communications about how you think my work or anybody's work can help your grandchildren, that's all you can do. You can lead them to the water, and hopefully they'll drink from the water. And try to relax. If you, and I don't know you, so I don't know if this is true, but I find a lot of the grandparents that I work with have a lot of apprehension because they're so worried that their family may not make it. And, of course, this is the last thing that any elder like you and I, you know, who have, you know, children, and then who have children of children like you do, that's the last thing we want, is to grow older knowing that our family is not doing well. So, number one, relax. Really relax yourself before you speak to your family. And then number two, use your influence in a loving way.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that call. We take our next caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Comments. I wanted to ask about, you earlier were talking about the sort of proportion of the listening to the speaking. I appreciate the calmness. I think, having raised seven kids, I think when kids perceive, they can sort of filibuster the situation. You want to interject or comment, and they say, "Oh, don't interrupt me. I'm not finished." My concern is, as the parent, sort of the representative of the grandparents, the ancestors, that you're competing for time and attention with the kids from school, maybe the administration from school, the popular culture, the TV, et cetera, all of them that have negative messages about the value of family, the value of elders, value differences in general. So I'm concerned that you have to sort of be fighting for the airtime in the kids' minds so that you can express the views of yourself and indirectly of the grandparents, sure, and the ancestors.
Sure. So great point that you bring up. And here's what I would say. Obviously, I can't reveal all the techniques and tips that I use when I'm coaching families, but I would say this. Yes, while you don't want to interrupt your child when they're speaking, and yes, they could be very rude and cursing and screaming and calling you horrible names, my method has a much bigger picture to it, which is that by the time you're working with a tween, because that's when I think this work should begin, like with 10 and 11 and 12-year-olds, it becomes an exchange of resources. That's the context that I teach families, that you're all going to be exchanging values. Like, what is the father value? What is the mother value? What is the children value? Everybody needs to know everybody's values and do their best to support each other to bring out the healthy behaviors so everybody can express them. However, I'm still old school in the sense that with children, we teach consequences. We don't teach punishments. We don't do anything punitive out of anger. But we do teach consequences because that is the fabric of conditional, conventional reality. You think a thought, you do an action, something's going to come back sooner or later. So we teach the parents how to raise their children, knowing that consequences are neither good or bad. They're just what reality is. And so when the children are complying with the values of the home, which, by the way, most parents don't even know how to define the values of their home. So I teach them to pick four or five virtues like responsibility, accountability, respect, whatever it may be, how to define them in one sentence or less, and then how to instill them in their children, and that their children don't respond in a favorable way. Of course, there are consequences, but the consequences are not punitive. It's all about sharing resources. So if the children are not willing to share resources back, like cleaning their bedroom or washing the dishes, there will be a consequence, but it's all about how will this consequence help you make it in the outside world.
Let's go to our next caller.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, my name's Russell, Mark. I have a 35-year-old son. You sound like your children are adults also, correct?
Yep, yeah. My son's 37, my daughter's 41.
So we're in the same, so I have two quick questions. Number one is maybe the easier one. How do we explain to children nowadays why we're stealing school from them? Because I think this, like, forced altruism that they're doing it for the grandparents is going to breed selfishness, if you excuse the pun. And the second thing is, Mark, I want to know, is your mentoring program, is that something, you know, when we were bringing up our kids, it was sort of like, you can't be their friend, but you don't want to be, you know, a disciplinarian. Is mentoring, like, between being a friend and being a parent? Because I know in drinking alcohol excessively, we can step in. If our children are cutting themselves, we step in. But there's a misguided wokeness, Mark, and I want to ask you a question. You just mentioned 11, 12-year-olds. There's a social contagion in the social media among adolescent girls, 13, 14, 15 years old, that they are insisting that they are now trans, that they should take hormones at that age, which could cause sterility, that even some of them having top surgery. Now, this kind of misguided wokeness is a lot like...
Let me answer one of your questions. Can I do that, please?
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
So let's talk about the crux of, I think, the three different points you were making, which is really mentoring. Mentoring, like you said, is really a combination of being a friend and being a parent. You have to care. You really want to be sincere in your desire to help. And if you're a black belt at mindfulness, which I'm becoming, which means that I can just sit and be objective. I can be a friend. I can listen, and I don't have to say or do anything. So with a sincere heart, I'm listening openly, and then when I respond, I'm not attached to whether the young person does it or not. What I am attached to is clearly, concisely, calmly, and confidently conveying my message, and then I'm done. I don't repeat it 2, 3, and 4 times. I don't demand that they get it. I just create quiet space, and then I'll ask, what's your sense of that? How do you relate to that? And then I ask them a lot of questions. So yes, that's what mentoring is to me, and it's a really deep skill. And when there's more people in the world doing that, I think the world will be a better place.
Excellent. And I think his other question was about transgendering, and I'm not sure that this is an appropriate place to have that discussion at this time. So I'm going to let you off the hook for that one, and we'll try to bring in someone who's really focused on that to talk about
of
those
course.
Issues. Thank you so much. Okay. So we'll take our next caller. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. My name is Janet. And I have a problem where my son, he is, about 40, 45 years old. And he is still living with me. And, I would like to get some help in getting him out of the house. He's an intelligent person. You know, he went to college, and right now he's unemployed. And he's a very affable person, but how can I get him on his own? I know he's sort of like a man child, and he thinks it's okay to still be there in the house with me. And so what can I do to get him out?
Great question. I hear that all the time. Again, I would first begin by saying, like, it's a whole method that I would be teaching you on how to do that, how to first really understand him biologically. Since you're a woman, he's a man. There are some differences, of course, healthy differences, by the way. And once you kind of get a sense as to where he's coming from, that makes a big difference. That said, it's like starting all over again. There needs to be a sharing of resources. That would be the angle that I would take with him. If he's affable and he's a sweet guy, then you don't have to be demonstrative and raise your voice. However, if you're providing all the resources, there needs to be a whole lot of exchange back. And if he really is unemployed and not really looking for work, well, that's not a good situation. Even if he is, he needs to be providing things back. He should be doing almost all the chores around the house. He should be doing really basically whatever the house needs and maybe even whatever you need. So there's an equal exchange. At least that's a good beginning. If he's not willing to do that, if that's the boy part of him that's really going to say, no, I'd rather just do this. This is really fun or really easy. Then there has to be a timeline. At some point, you would have to gently, lovingly put your foot down and say, in 6 months, if there's not an equal exchange of energy here, then I'm going to ask you to leave. And either he'll get it together in some good way or he won't. It's going to be a matter of, can you really handle having him leave for his own good? So you're going to really have to look at that and go within. And if you are, then start creating a resource where it has to be equal exchange.
That was a wonderful response. Thank you. That was our last caller that came through, and they were very good calls. Thank you all for joining us. And I'm wondering if you could, we have a few minutes remaining of the program, and I want you to give out your information again, so you could do that now. And I'm wondering if you could share a relaxation exercise with people so that they can de-stress for the day.
I can do that. And before I do, I just want to say one thing quickly. Back in the year 2007, I think it was, I had a chance to spend a little bit of time with the Samburu tribe in Kenya. And I learned a lot about family dynamic and even a little bit about rite of passage. But what I learned was this, is that parents now have the right instincts. We still have the right instincts. We just need to learn ways to raise our children in this new era. So I really want to put that message out there. I think parents know what to do. You just know how, you have to know how to do it now. It's a different game. That said, the website is ymuw.org, Young Men's Ultimate Weekend, and there's a free ebook and a free report that you can get there that'll help you right away.
And say that again.
And then if you want to
look, yeah, say
ymuw.org.
Mm-hmm.
And then if parents want to learn more about the services I provide to them, like coaching and workshops, then they would go to challengingteenagesons.com.
Excellent. And yeah, let's teach people how to do a little relaxation. Lots of parents and children out there.
Beautiful. I call this the right now meditation, being present right now. A very simple way to breathe and relax is where the exhale is longer than the inhale. When there's a long exhale for a short period of time, the body secretes endorphins, which is very relaxing. Most of us do shallow breathing, so we live in fight or flight, where it's mostly adrenaline and cortisol. So I'm just going to encourage everybody right now to start breathing in a gentle way where you breathe in through your nose or your mouth or both. But it's just a natural, gentle breath in. And then it's followed immediately by a longer, slower, controlled breath out, again through your nose or your mouth or both. And then you just pause. You're just going to wait for your body to tell you when to breathe in again. So just practice taking a natural, slow breath in through your nose or your mouth. It's kind of a natural, slow breath. And then you're going to take a slower breath out through your nose or your mouth or both. And then you just pause. Just take a moment to do that, and then I'll add the second part. Normal breath in through your nose or your mouth or both. Slower, longer, controlled breath out, and pause. While you're doing that, take a moment to notice what your body is doing. And you say it to yourself, like, I feel my butt on the chair. I feel my feet on the floor. I feel my heart, my hands touching each other. I feel my back up against the back support. So just take a moment to actually literally do that. You're going to breathe in a calm way, and you're going to state to yourself what your body's actually experiencing with no analyzing. Like, not, I wish my chair was softer or my hands were warmer. It's just observation, mindful looking at what's happening. Take a moment to do that. Even if you're going to repeat the same thing over and over and over again, keep your mind present. And then take a moment to notice whatever you're hearing. So you might say, I hear somebody talking. I hear a dog barking. I hear a car going by, whatever it may be. And just repeat the same thing, even if it's only one thing, over and over and over again while you're breathing. Whatever you're hearing. If your mind wanders, that's what minds do. Just bring it right back to whatever you're hearing or feeling with your body while you're breathing. And then take a moment to notice whatever you're seeing. If your eyes are closed, you see any colors or shapes. If your eyes are open, just call out to yourself whatever you're seeing. I'm looking out my window now. I'd say I see 1, 2, 3, 4 trees. I see some clouds. I see 1, 2, 3 cars parked. So you're just going to say to yourself whatever you're seeing while you're breathing. Gentle breath in, longer breath out, and pause until your body tells you to breathe again. So just take another moment to state to yourself whatever you're seeing, hearing, or feeling with your body while you're breathing. If your mind wanders, just bring it right back. And then just take a moment now to slowly bring your attention back to wherever you are. If your eyes were closed, slowly open them. If your eyes are open, just focus on one or two objects and just state what they are, like I'm looking at my computer screen and a window. And it's just kind of a way to bring your attention back to where we are now. So something that simple, if you practice that, I tell my patients and the families I work with, if you do that 15 times a day for 15 seconds, because once you get good at it, it takes 15 seconds, within 3 to 6 months, you will be able to do what I've done, which my family would tell you. When I was younger, I was all over the place. They didn't call it ADD, they called it fidgeting. And there was a lot of stress and anxiety and depression in my family, which I told you. But I've been doing techniques like this for 40 years now. And most of the time, I can stay really calm no matter what's going on. If I start to beat myself up, I just go right into the technique. I can keep my brain chemistry mostly at an endorphic level where I feel relaxed and I feel calm. If you practice this, I assure you, you can calm yourself down. If you want to get that technique, email me. Go to ymuw.org or Challenging Teenage Sons and email us and tell me that you want the technique and I'll mail it to you. I'll email it to you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We are out of time, Mark Schillinger. Thank you so much for joining us today and hopefully we'll be able to talk again.
I would love to do that. And again, thank you for letting me complete this loop of listening to WBII when I was a teen and here I am on the show. Thank you so much, Catherine, for the opportunity.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Whatever happened to the sun? Used to always come back when we were young. We'd sing and party all night long. But seasons don't ever come on time no more. And war paints over the years, and anger fills our tears. What happened to the sun? But I know. Shot a gun or a loved one.